God bless your hearts. It's good to see you again. I feel like I've been on business travel for a long, long time and finally come back and the kids are home. You know, you've been in a different room for weeks. I've been missing you. I want to read a passage of Scripture. I want us to pray. And then I want to challenge your thinking. We're going to be looking today at a book that you probably don't spend a lot of time in. It's the book of Ecclesiastes. And I'm going to read you from chapter 12. I see some of you older folks smiling already, and your younger folks are going, "Where's that in the Bible?" "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you say, 'I have no delight in them.' Before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened, and the clouds return after the rain. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble, and mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim, and the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. And one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms, and the grasshopper drags himself along, and the caperberry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken, and the golden bowl is crushed, and the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. And then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity." I submit to you, we need the spirit of wisdom and revelation this morning. Let's ask for it. Holy Father, I thank you for the amazing credibility of your word and how there is a word from your heart to our spirit for every season of life. I invite the spirit of wisdom and revelation to come and illuminate us to the perspective you have on our existence and grant to us the grace to respond to the challenge of your spirit to serve you while today is called today. Amen. The sign at the gas station reads, "Free gas tomorrow." Now, a casual reading inspires a naive hope because tomorrow the sign reads the same thing. That's an illustration of a truth that tomorrow never comes. You may have heard it expressed like this: today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday. But tomorrow never gets here. This conundrum is the difficult problem we face in our mental concepts about life. Without tomorrow ever arriving, the end eventually gets here. Now, along the way, we have this disposition about tomorrow, 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 and it never arrives. But eventually, it's all over. Now, the man who penned these words, the one who's called the preacher, was in fact King Solomon. And he's writing these words to young people from the position of being old. I want to consider the circumstances of King Solomon. Most of you, or maybe not, I think it's not trustworthy to say you understand the scripture anymore, because our society is biblically illiterate, and when we embrace new people, we cannot assume they have any foundation in the word. So let us recall that King Solomon was King David's son. And Solomon is accredited as being the wisest man who ever lived. In addition to that, among the kings of his generation, he was also the wealthiest man who ever lived. Now, I haven't seen anybody do the tabulations of Solomon's extensive holdings versus Bill Gates' known income, but for his day, Solomon was the crown jewel. And of himself, he makes these comments. And I applied myself by heart and mind to seek and search out by human wisdom all human activity under the sun. Now think about this. You're the king, you're the wisest man who's ever lived, and you're wealthier than any of your peers. When you say you're going to give yourself to something, you can fund it. In Ecclesiastes 2:3 and following, he says, I searched in my mind how to cheer my body with wine, and yet at the same time having my mind hold its course and guide me with human wisdom, and how to lay hold of folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. I made great works, I built myself houses, I planted vineyards, I made for myself gardens and orchards, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools of water from which to water the forest and make the trees bud. And I bought men servants and maid servants, and I had servants born in my house. And also I had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and of the provinces. And I got for myself men singers and women singers and all the delights of the sons of men and concubines, very many. Go ahead and punch them in the rib cage if they smiled, ladies. So I became great and increased all the more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me and stood by me, and whatever my eyes desired, I kept not from them. Here's a guy who did anything he wanted to do, acquired everything that caught his attention, and gave himself to folly to explore its depths. Does that sound like anybody you know? Does it sound like anybody you thought you'd like to be? Does it sound like friends you know who are chasing their tail in the vain hope of finding something of substance out in a cotton candy world? I withheld not my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion and reward for all my toil. Basically, I deserved it. Now then, that's his declaration of how he lived his life from the top of the ladder. And now, after a lifetime of what he considers vain pursuit, he begins to write the passage that we read. I want to take a look at that passage from several different perspectives. I want you to consider with me, do you remember in college, I think it was called Art Appreciation, in high school English, it was the section on poetry. Anybody remember those days? Where they give you all these similes and metaphors, and the teacher says to you, now, I want you to write a paper on what he's talking about. Now, I'm South Alabama poor white trash. I have no idea what he's talking about, okay? I did not enjoy those assignments. But much later in life, I came to appreciate that the power of poetry is that it communicates images to you that stay with you. Under the budding chestnut tree that... Anybody remember that? Any of that stuff? Excuse me. As Solomon begins to use these images, he's actually communicating out of familiar language things that young people know. I want you to consider the oldest person you can think of, or someone who is old. When you think of old, parenthetically, please consider it beyond my years. Just go farther in that direction. But I want you to consider the image of old. I want you to think of some man, some woman, some relative, some person that caught your attention and you said, wow, they're really old. And I'm not talking the War Games definition of old, where Matthew Broderick says concerning the guy who built the system, he was really old. And she said, doesn't look that old. Well, he was 40. Oh, you're right. He's really old. But when you think about old people, what do you see? That's right. As you describe all those things, I want you to put them in this context. What I see is my future. If you live long enough, that's your destination. Now let's run through this and list some stuff out. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no delight in them. Now, which years are those? That's the other end. It's where the old people sit, who are weak and frail. Their friends have died. Their children despise them. Their substance is gone. Their appetite has abandoned them. They don't sleep anymore. And they long for the veil of death. When those days come. He says, before the sun and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return. What kind of clouds do old people experience? Depression. And what are the rains that come again? Tears. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble. Now, what's the purpose of a watchman? To guard the place. And how does he guard it? With the strength of his hand. When the watchmen begin to tremble. You've seen old people with the shakes? Doesn't have to be Parkinson's for it to be difficult. And the mighty men stoop. What mighty men? Osteoporosis? I don't care how tall you are today, anticipate being shorter eventually. The grinding ones stand idle because they are few. What are the grinding ones, people? Your teeth. In the last 50 years, dental care in this country has gone up exponentially. But when I was growing up, it was no teeth or false teeth. Everywhere you looked, you saw gray hair. The grinding ones are idle because they are few. And those who look through windows grow dim. What, pray tell, might that mean? And the doors on the street cry out for Metal Musil. They are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. The stomach doesn't grumble anymore because you have no appetite. And the one will arise at the sound of the bird. In the rock, one of the old agents is saying to one of the senior agents, listen, he's as old as we are. I have to get up three times in the night to go to the bathroom. Sleep escapes you. A bird can cause you to rouse from your rest. You ever notice old people tend to get up early? And the daughters of song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place. You know this. Help, I'm falling. And I can't get up. And the terrors of the road. When you're young, all you want to do is go out and stay out late. When you're old, it's just too much trouble to go anywhere. It's a lot like having children. Suddenly, to go anywhere is a major evolution. Because you've got to take all kinds of stuff with you for them. the almond tree blossoms. The white and the gray come forth. The grasshopper drags himself along because his gait, which was once proud and strong and virile, is now weakened. And the caperberry is ineffective. Even desire escapes you. It is no longer a life driven by passion. For man goes to his eternal home. Among the Egyptians and the Phoenicians, the tombs were called the house of eternity. And so he references that metaphor in speaking about death being nearby, while mourners go about in the street. And he says again, remember him. Him who? Remember him, the Lord. Forget him not in the days of your youth. And when you're old, remember him. Before the silver cord of life is extinguished and the golden bowl, the crown of your glory, the brain and the wisdom and the experiences fail, and the pitcher by the well is shattered with labored breathing, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed as breath ceases altogether. And then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. All is vanity. I don't know when it happens, but for every young person, there comes a day when you run out of immortal perspective. These youngsters who are taking these motorcycles, racing them up an incline, doing somersaults with them in the air, standing out behind them, headed for the landing spot, think they are immortal. Imagine somebody in their 70s doing that. What would you think? Is he out of his mind? Does he have a death wish? You see, there's a change in perspective between youth and the end. The bump in the road where you can see both ends of this shooting match. Seeing the end is very, very important to living the beginning. Once we understand what the preacher is saying, the immortality of youth starts to be instructed by the aged. You know, old people know stuff. I forget where I read it, but I recall that one of the testimonies of the Native Americans is that in the tribal council, they would allow the crazy person to be on the council. Because even crazy people know stuff. That's an interesting perspective, don't you think? There are things to be learned from the aged so that before the day arrives when your strength and vigor have been spent, you have the opportunity to make a choice to invest your life rather than spending your life. When you look around the circumstances of your relational spheres, do you see people who are spending their lives? They chase after everything that appears to bring some satisfaction, some temporary joy, some vain hope of promise, and it always tends to become dirt. The oldest man that I knew personally was my step-grandfather. He died at 101. He was frail, used up. He had been a violent man in his day. He had never been very large, but he was very, very mean. And it was known he could whip any five men, so nobody ever messed with him. When he disciplined his sons, he did it with a horse whip, because in his earlier days, he'd been a horse trainer. That violence permeated the family. The abuse that accompanies rage and violence had left its mark on all of the grown children. So when he was older, even his own children didn't want to be with him. I'm instructed by those kinds of things. I've been in the nursing homes and the rehabilitation center for the aged. I've been in the places where parents have been thrown away by their children. And it's a bitter, ugly environment. And I've made this observation of human beings in general. When you're young and you have a certain strength of will, you can reign over your excesses, your profanity, your appetite, your sharp tongue. But over time, strength of will fades, and those things which are not dealt with become visible to all, and you are helpless to master them. I'm challenging you from the perspective of age. What a fun thing to be saying this in the presence of a bunch of kids. It's all relative, you understand. But we need to grasp that there's a conclusion to this thing and navigate our way toward the conclusion. Listen to this. Honor and enjoy your Creator while you're still young, before the years take their toll and your vigor wanes. Before your vision dims and the world blurs and the winter years keep you close to the fire. In old age, your body no longer serves you so well. Muscles slacken, grip weakens, joints stiffen, the shades are pulled down on the world. You're awakened now. Oh, you can't come and go as you will. Things grind to a halt. The hum of the household fades away. You're awakened now by birdsong. Hikes to mountains are a thing of the past. Even a stroll down the road has its terrors. Your hair turns apple blossom white, adorning a fragile and impotent matchstick body. Yes, you're well on your way to eternal rest, while your friends make plans for your funeral. Life, lovely while it lasts, is soon over. Life, as we know it, precious and beautiful, ends. The body is put back in the same ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who first breathed it. It's all smoke, nothing but smoke. The quester says that everything is smoke. Now, verse 13, I've held to this moment. All has been heard. The end of the matter is this. Fear God, revere and worship Him, knowing that He is, and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man, the full original purpose of His creation, the object of God's providence, the root of character, the foundation of all happiness, the adjustment to all inharmonious circumstances and conditions under the sun, and the whole duty of man. Vanity, as the preacher uses it, expresses the futile attempt to be satisfied apart from God. And we excel at that, don't we? People just excel at trying to fill the God hole with every imaginable thing that they can lay their hands on. But in fact, vapor of vapors and futility of futilities, says the preacher, all is futility, emptiness, falsity, vainglory, and transitory. That conclusion comes from the counselor who's had more advantage than any of us will see. A fully funded life of power, authority, and riches, and the capacity to explore every conceivable thing the heart might desire. And his conclusion as he writes this to the young people of his kingdom is, serve God today, because tomorrow never comes. I wish I could be 25, sitting out there listening to a guy pushing 60 say stuff like this. Because when I was young, they didn't talk like this. They always tried to get me to do stuff that didn't have any particular value to me. But if I was going to be a good one of them, I had to do what they did. But the preacher says, remember your Creator at the beginning and at the end, because we will return to a day of accountability with Him. I want to submit to you, as a bunch of young people who are finding your way, establishing your lives, trying to locate your life partner, having locate your life partner, trying to figure out how to fund your life partner, how to do all that stuff that Solomon didn't have to worry about. Okay? You're concerned about establishing yourself in your job situation. You're concerned about being a good parent. You're concerned about many practical affairs of life. There's an interesting concept that I would like to provoke you westernized thinkers with. It is not an erroneous statement to say that concerning those raised in Western culture, when we begin to talk about the God stuff, we have this mental framework that we are a human being having spiritual experiences. That's a legitimate assessment of Western culture. But a Native American culture has a totally different perspective, and it's more reflective of the East. From that perspective, they declare, I'm a spiritual being having human experiences. I'd like to submit to you that Solomon makes the case that we're spiritual beings and are to be mindful of that as we experience human situations. The metamorphosis that occurs from that mindset will transform your existence. It puts you in the place where you're free to express the grace that's on deposit within you and let it permeate your experiences. The alternative is to be a human whose experiences permeate them and you go looking for a spiritual experience to correct it. Does that make sense? Does that communicate to you? We should be infusing the life around us from a framework that says, He is in me, I represent Him, I'm living that grace. But rather, we allow life to affect us and come crying to God to pull the thorn out of our paw. It's two different frames of reference. In the challenge I want to set before you this morning, I want you to consider what it might mean to live your life in genuine relationship with the Spirit of God and to allow Him to express Himself through you into life's experiences, because you are about to pay $20 to the children's home in the Ukraine. You are a spiritual being having human experiences. I want to submit to you that this might be a good day. The children bless you. Molly, would you see that this gets in the Ukraine Children's Fund? Thank you. I'm serious about that. That's where that money goes. All right? When will you serve God? When I get big, after I get my driver's license, when I'm out of high school, when I finish college, after my spouse and I get settled, when I get that promotion, when I'm finally vested in the company, when the children go back to school, when the kids finish college, when I retire, I'll have more time. When will you serve God? Tomorrow never comes. What we have is today. And I challenge you to begin the process today. And if there's a tomorrow, by the time it gets here, it will be today. Serve God today, because tomorrow never comes. If you feel like you need to do some business with the Lord on that, then I want to suggest that as we close out this morning, you present yourself to Mike and you acknowledge to him, I've been sitting on my grace. I know what God's gifted me to do. I just haven't done it. And today, while it is still today, I want to declare to you my intent to obey. If you need help in that obedience, he and his team can supply it. But don't let the vigor of life pass just having been spent on activity. Invest it. Invest your life in the things God has graced you to accomplish. Amen. Michael, lead them on.
I'd like my team to come forward, please. Ushers, would you remove this, please? If I can get somebody to... Thanks. Thanks, Jay. Thank you, gentlemen. Jay's all over that. If this was a message that was for you today, if there was something that said, oh, yeah, okay, I just don't want to wait until tomorrow. Today's the day. I want to invite you to come on up, Jay, Rebecca. I want to invite you to come on up. If you have something that you want to, as Pastor Lanny said, if there's something that you want to say to me, is that, yes, this day I want to tell you that I want to get plugged in. I want to get connected. I want to go forward in the things of the kingdom. If you know that there's some grace that's been placed on you and you just hadn't done it, anything with it yet, or if you don't know what that grace is yet, but you know there's something because God puts grace, gives grace to everybody, some kind of grace. But if you don't know what it is yet, well, that's okay too. I still invite you to come forward. Understood? So please come. If anybody has some sort of physical thing that's going on with them, and they want some physical healing or emotional, I want you to come forward as well because we want to pray with you. We don't want you to leave here feeling as bad as you did when you came in. Okay, so please come.